This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, I'm thrilled to meet Zunga. That's not her real name, but we'll call her Zunga this morning because she's had one hell of a life so far. She lives at Bethany Home in Doornfontein, which is a center for gender-based violence survivors and their children. She's also a first-year marketing student at Boston College. I'm very, very happy to meet you, and I'm glad you could come and be with us today. And I'm sorry that we have to talk about unpleasant things, but we are in the middle of what people call 16 days of activism. Normally, we don't see nearly enough of the kind of discussion, of the kind of action that we would like to see. But I thought we can't let this pass without at least paying attention to this from whatever point of view we can. And I thought the best possible way to do that was to get you in here, Zunga. It's a pleasure to meet you. Thanks for coming. It's nice to see you. So will you tell me and tell everybody else what kind of a life you've had up to now and what led you to this point in your life? Because it's horrifying. I don't want to tell your story because I might not get it exactly right. Okay. Go ahead. Don't be shy.
Okay, wow. Thank you all for this opportunity.
Sure.
Wow. Okay. We're still on the 16 days of activism against women and child abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm one of those women who experience all kind of abuse spiritually, emotionally, sexually, and physically.
When you were young, you had a stepfather, and your mother, your own mother, was verbally abusive to you. Your stepfather was sexually abusive. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
And then, as if that wasn't bad enough, you got into a situation where your mother found out that your stepfather had sexually abused you, and she blamed you.
Yes.
And she then threw you out of the house, and they decided they were going to traffic you. They were going to sell you as a sex slave, effectively.
Yes.
This is, I mean, how old were you at this stage?
Actually, I grew up in KZN.
Yeah.
With my grandparents, my grandmother, and my grandfather. And I didn't know my mom until I was 14. It happened that my grandparent passed away on the same week. And the family members, like, they told my mother, you have to take your child with you. My mother was staying here in Joburg. So my mother was married. And then she didn't tell her husband that she's got a child in KZN. It happened that I have to move in with her here in Johannesburg, 2008. I was only 14. So I have to pretend it's my mother's sister because it's how my mother told her husband that this is my young sister. As our parent has passed away, she's going to stay with us. I have to look after her. I have to be mother's sister. So for me to be my mom's sister was another thing because I had so much anger that my mother, you never be there for me. And now I have to be your sister, which is something else. I don't have a sister. So I realized that my mom has got so much anger. Because if I do, like, small things, like mistakes, she will beat me and then she'll call me stupid, useless, look like your father. I wish you were dead. And I'll ask her, who's my father? Because I don't know who's my father. And then, like, she'll keep going on. So get to the point where I was so close to my stepfather than my mother because my mom wasn't doing anything for me. Only my stepfather, like, would give me money to buy toiletries and to carry at school. So I found it like my stepfather, it's kind to me than my mother. So one weekend when my mother was away, my stepfather came back from work drunk. It was the first time to saw him like that. I didn't know it was my time to be raped. And he forced himself to me, and I told my mother. My mother was like, no, your father won't do that to you. That was the first time hearing that he is my father. All along, he was my brother-in-law. So, okay, I took it, and it happened second time where he found me ironing, and he forced himself, and I was fighting with him, and he burned me with the iron on my stomach. And I told my mother when she got back from work, this is what happened today. It's like, no, I will take you to the doctor, and there's no need to go to the clinic. And then she went with me to the doctor. She said, I will speak to him. And then that was it.
Because she didn't want you to tell the doctor what had happened.
Yes. And then didn't stop from there. Keep happening. Get to the point where I was like, you know what? I think this is how I have to pay back the money that my stepfather is giving to me. To me, like, to live with it, I have to pretend as if, you know what, ne? It's not an abuse. this is how I'm supposed to live my life. And because he's kind to me than my mother, who's beating me now and then, yeah. I have to just accept it. It kept happening until 2010 when I was pregnant. I don't know my mom how she found out that I was 3 weeks pregnant. She also took me to the doctor and then to abort the child. And then we came back within 2 weeks. She called the woman from her church, says, I think my daughter is demonic possessed. They came.
She said you were possessed by demons.
Yes. I'm sleeping around. That's why she told her woman from the church that, like, I'm sleeping around. And that time I had no friend, even the school. I was a child that, like, just quiet and live in the corner. All the activities, I was not participating.
Well,
because
you didn't, I mean, you couldn't have really been happy. There was so much horrible stuff going on in your life. There was no way for you to make friends. So you were on your own?
Yes.
And now your mother says you're demon-possessed, so she tells someone from her church, and then what did they do after that?
They prayed for me, they poured up 25 liters bucket of water, cold one, they said, like, they're getting rid of the demon that I'm having. That what happened.
And that didn't help?
Didn't help.
Because you weren't possessed by demons.
I wasn't.
No. There was nothing wrong with you. What was wrong was with these people who just couldn't treat you properly. And what did they, were they trying to sell you to a guy in Thailand?
Yes, on 2013, on the 15th of September, my mom sent me to ShopRite. It was around 6:30. She never sent me to shops late that time. But she decided to just send me to buy bread. And I said to her, like, there is a bread in the fridge. Why are you sending me to buy bread? She's like, I'm telling you, go and buy bread. I was like, okay, cool. She said, leave your phone behind. I was like, okay, cool. I put my shoes on and I took the money. When I get off from the flat, by the corner of the flat by Web Street and Kame, there were just guys sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they were just sitting. Because
sure.
It's summer, like, it's still, it's not dark, like, still light. There's still, like, light. So I was like, no, it's fine. There was a car parking up the road in the hill. So I thought maybe just people that are standing there didn't, like, thought of something was. So
you didn't have to be afraid. You didn't think.
So
oh.
When I just, like, turned the corner, the guy just grabbed me behind me. And then, like, the car came fast. And then everything just happened fast. They put me in the boat to drive along with me. And then I end up in the place in Uppington where I was kept for.
Uppington?
Yes. I was kept for 10 days. 9 days, 10 days when I was found. And when I was there, like, I was being beaten, chained behind the chair and dragged and, yeah, sleeping with different men because the thing was happening there. There were a lot of people that were coming in and out, like, I don't know what they were busy with. Sometimes, like, early in the morning, like, because where I was sleeping, I heard a mantras and...
It's okay. I know it's hard to tell the story because you don't want to go through it again, and I didn't mean to make you feel uncomfortable.
And the thing that will happen there, it's a lot, because I was being beaten for being stubborn. And on the first 2 days, I was on my own, like I was alone. On the third day, they brought a young girl, her name was Bali. And we're sitting on the basement, and then, like, when a guy comes, some they were, like, clean, some they were just dirty. Like, you won't understand, like, because it was dark, like.
So you didn't even know who these guys, there was no way
know.
For you to tell.
But, like, if this guy, they were sleeping with you, they would take you to the bed, like, a room with a bed, like, it's what was happening. Like, they will sleep with you, and then they will take you back, and then they will chain you behind that chair. And then sometimes they will take you, like, photos when you're naked or you're having a sex with somebody. That those are the things that were happening there. So, and then on the 10th day, which was on the 25th of September, the police, I don't know how they found out that place was, like, keeping people there, and there were people, like, selling drugs there. So they came to raid that place. So they already received a tip-off that the police are coming to that place. So what they did, they just put us inside the wardrobe. Bali, like, couldn't move, couldn't do anything. Only me, like, still, like, was still strong that time. And I could hear that, no, these voices are different, are more like South African language. Because these guys, they were speaking foreign language. So
you didn't understand them?
Didn't understand it. So I started trying to move, but I didn't have any strength. and I kept moving. And somebody noticed, no, there's something on that wardrobe, and then the police, they just moved things around. And then I couldn't talk when I saw them. Like, I was admitted to hospital in Upington, and then 2 days, and then they asked me who I am. And then I just write it down because I couldn't remember anything. I kept asking, where's my mother? I gave them my mom's number. And then when they contacted my mother said, I thought she's with her boyfriend. And I never had a boyfriend. And it's what she told the police when they were asking. We thought she was with her boyfriend. And then it happened that they moved me to Johannesburg Cheney. I stayed in a hospital for 4 months because I had a spinal cord operation. And then I had to go to Tara Hospital for 2 months.
Well, I think anybody who hears that story must be trying to imagine how you felt at that time. And it's very difficult for anyone to get into your skin and to feel how you must have felt. But I do think it's very brave that you are willing to share your story with us and to tell us in this month where people are meant to be thinking about gender-based violence, what kind of experience some women in South Africa go through, and too many women. And Zunga, I don't know that most of us have an understanding of this, but it's very, very important that you get to tell your story, and I think it's hard for you to tell that story, but you have to do it because you could save other women. And I'm proud of you for doing that. I mean, it might not mean anything to you, but I think there are loads of people in this country who might have never imagined things like this happened. And the fact that you get to tell your story to us and you get us to feel something is very powerful. So thank you.
Okay.
I'm sorry about what's happened to you. Nobody deserves this. How are you doing now?
I'm doing very good because I started talking about my story earlier this year. For me, like, standing up and said, you know what, I want to be a voice, it's when Mbali died last year because Mbali, like, couldn't make it. So she died. I made a vow upon myself. I was like, you know what? There are people outside there that are going through a lot and people that don't know about it. If it happened to me and I survive and I'm still making it, I'm still strong, I'm still brave, why I don't speak about it? Why I don't share my experience with other people? Because for me, standing up and say, you know what? It once happened to me and I'm still going, like, through the stage of recovering. What can I do? What can I tell the people? Yes, it is real. It's happening. Because it's happening in front of our eyes. We're not saying anything. Some people are still with them at the campus. They don't know that I'm a survivor. And get to when they started sharing, said, you know what? I saw that thing on the TV. Is it real? And get to the point where it's like, it is real. It's happening. So how can we educate our people? That is where it started. This I was like, you know what? If I've been given an opportunity, what can I tell people about the abuse that is happening in front of our nose and our eyes? We're not doing anything about it.
You've started your own survivor-led movement. It's called Enough.
Yes.
Tell me about Enough.
Enough-led movement, I haven't launched it. It was just an idea. I started with T-shirt. Mm-hmm. It's called Enough. At the back, it's survivor's voice, like where we expressing our voices, like I've been hurt, and then like suicide, because those are the stages that we go through if we've been abused and how we've been treated in the community and how are they, like, what are the challenges are we going through, and if we come together as survivors, what can we do together? Because for now, I'm still having 3 survivors of different kind of abuse, and they said, Tembega, you look like a strong person, Zunga, and at the end of, like, what can you do? And I said to them, why we don't start something? They said, you have to drive that initiative. I was like, you know what, this is my brand, Enough. You guys organize yourself and then we come up with ideas, because I believe that you got a great potential. If I did made it and I'm still going through a stage of saying, you know what, I can do great things. It's not about my story. It's about what I am and the potential that I have, and I'm capable of doing great things. So as survivors, it's not that we're just survivors of abuse. That is who we are. But we can do things. We can, like, still, like, follow our dreams and, like, look forward to our future. Let not the circumstances define us. Well, that is all about the Enough brand.
You're a beautiful example of that, and I'm very, very happy we got to meet you this morning. And thank you for coming to spend time with us. It's a privilege to hear your story from your own experience. I think you are well on your way to making massive inroads and to helping so many other people, and that to me is a tremendous privilege that very few of us get to have in our lives. Thank you for sharing your story. I know it's difficult, and you're just exactly the kind of person that this country needs to help all those other women who are still stuck, who are still in a situation they can't get out of, who are still afraid to speak. So please don't give up. Thank you, Zunga.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Wow. Hey, Mabs. What a story. Jesus. Sometimes it's hard here in hearing these things and trying to find out what really goes on in the world, because we live in our own little universe and you kind of forget that there are people who are going through some seriously difficult stuff. Big thank you to the Bethany Home in Doornfontein and to everybody who's so far been involved in the 16 days of activism. Let's not be like so many of our politicians who talk about these things and do nothing. If there is a way that you can help, and it might be in your own community, it might even be in your own family, then that's a place to start. Because this is something that we can't just turn a blind eye to. It's not something we can ignore anymore.
Whew. This is CliffCentral.com.